Air Vice Marshal Young, Reel 1. Where were you born?
In Zululand, South Africa.
When was that?
5th of May, 1918.
How did you come to be born there?
Well, my parents... my father was a South African. My mother was born in England, but her family went out there and they were married. And I've got a lot of uncles and aunts and people still in South Africa.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a solicitor for most of the time after he left school. But he did, at one stage, go up into Zululand, that's where I was born, farming cotton, which didn't go very well there after a few years, and he returned to the law.
Where did you go to school?
I went to a school called Michael House, which is one of the South African leading schools.
And how old were you when you left?
I left when I was 17, and I went into... I was article to a lawyer's office. I was going to become a solicitor. But having got the flying bug, I was agitating to go to Cranwell. That's a cadet college at Cranwell. And I was fortunate in that I got a scholarship from South Africa, from the South African government, to go to Cranwell.
What gave you the flying bug?
Well, my sister had a boyfriend who had an aeroplane, and we used to go and deliver Sunday newspapers in the rather distant parts by checking them out into people's tennis courts, which was rather fun. And I really caught the bug at that time.
So were you allowed to take on the controls?
He used to let me fly straight and level in the air, or straight and level as I could manage. But I never learned to fly it or to take it off or land it.
Did you find your course at Cranwell really prepared you for what was to come? Was it
yes.
A good course?
Yes. At that stage, it was a two-year course, and it was run rather like a university, where you had a lot of academic subjects as well as learning to fly and learning aerodynamics and that sort of thing.
So when did you get your commission?
Perhaps I ought to say that I got the Sword of Honour when I left there, which was it was about I think they were due to give it to a colonial at that time, and so and that was in 1938.
When war was declared by Chamberlain on the 3rd of September 1939, did that take you by surprise or not?
Not really. One of the remarkable things was way back when I was in South Africa, and I was trying to persuade my father to let me join the RAF, and he was inclined to oppose it. My mother said, there's going to be a war. It was the time, of course, the Abyssinian troubles, or the invasion of Abyssinia by the Italians. And she came to my rescue and said, you know, it's much better if he learns to fly, because when war breaks out, he's going to do it anyway. And so that was a rescue operation. And then I was able to get the scholarship, which clinched it.
How was the declaration of war greeted by you and the people round about you? Was it greeted with enthusiasm or indifference or what?
Mixed. I think... yes, I think there were very mixed feelings. I don't think anybody wanted a war, but we were very sort of self-confident and thought that we were jolly good pilots and that we'd acquit ourselves well. And at that time, I was in fact, when war declares, I was in 32 Squadron at Biggin Hill. And we used to have the auxiliary squadrons to us. And when war broke out, the 601 Squadron came there. And they used to play I remember polo on motorbikes and things like that. And there was a sort of carnival feeling about it.
Sort of what feeling?
Almost a sort of carnival feeling. You know, the people doing mad things like that, playing, and a tenseness also, of course.
Can you tell me a bit about 32 Squadron, what its role was and what type of equipment it had?
It was a fighter squadron at Biggin Hill. When I went there in 1938, we had gauntlets, the Gloucester gauntlets, but we re-equipped with Hurricanes and had Hurricanes when the war broke out.
How did you find the Hurricane when it first came out? What was your reaction to it?
Oh, it was absolutely marvellous. The Gladiator, of course, was, I think, one of the nicest airplanes ever to fly. But the Hurricane, you know, the monoplane and the much more powerful engines and higher performance at height, one really felt one was flying something really up to date and modern.
Was it gauntlets or gladiators that you had before the Hurricanes?
Well, we first had gauntlets, and then we went straight from gauntlets to Hurricanes. But I left the squadron before the war, before the anything happened, really. And I was adjutant at the time of 32 Squadron, and I thought I was going to miss the war. So I managed to get myself posted to 615 Auxiliary Squadron, who were just going out to France, and they needed reinforcement with some of these, by some regulars. And they had Gladiators. And the Gladiator was the most wonderful airplane to fly.
How did you manage that, to get transferred to that squadron?
Well, I really... giving away a secret which I haven't done before. It just so happened when I was on my own in the office one day and the squadron commander was out, a signal came in saying one experienced pilot to be posted to 615 Squadron, and I replied giving my name. I don't know if the squadron commander ever found out, but it wasn't all that naughty, I suppose. As I say, I thought I was going to miss the war sitting there, squadron adjutant.
So when you say auxiliary squadron, this was the Auxiliary Air Force?
Yes. It was 615 County of Surrey, and it was Churchill's squadron. I mean, he was our honorary commodore, and in fact came and visited us in France.
Were the people in 615 Squadron very different from those in 32 Squadron?
Not really. The majority of them, of course, were auxiliaries, but they were all pilots. And I suppose there were about half a dozen of us regulars joined them. No, it was just like being with any other squadron, except they were perhaps a little bit more... I nearly said irresponsible. It's not the right word, but... the discipline wasn't quite the same as ours had been in the air. It was, of course, but they had a different sort of, I don't know, it's hadn't been brought up, you see, in, through a military academy and that sort of thing. But they, in the air, they were very good indeed.
You said that the Gladiator was very nice to fly. Can you be more specific?
Yes, well, it was the last of the biplanes, of the operational biplanes. Of course, it didn't have the speed and couldn't get to the heights of the other airplanes, but for formation aerobatics and things like that, it was really a very good airplane. I think it's about the first airplane ever that you could roll off the top of a loop of takeoff, which is I've seen done on a number of occasions.
But
go straight into it from the takeoff and actually roll out of the top. So it was very aerobatic altogether. Yes.
But in view of its slowness and so on, did you feel apprehensive about taking it to France?
No, I think we all knew we were going to be re-equipped pretty smartly with because they were all qualified pilots, and we were in the process of re-equipping with Hurricanes, of course, when the real war broke out on the 10th of May.
Can you tell me how the transfer to France took place?
Yes, we all went to Croydon Airfield, the old civil airfield of Croydon, Grass Airfield, and joined there, and the new chaps like me to the squadron, who hadn't flown gladiators before, had to familiarise ourselves with them. And then we all flew out as a squadron to France at sometime at the beginning of November. And we went to an airfield called Merville.
Where is it located?
Well, in the north, near Lille. And the first thing that happened, of course, was we all had a meal there. And we were then briefed on where our quarters were. Most of us were put up, well, I think all of us were put up by local families. And I was billeted in a staminé, or café tabac, with some marvellous people who, really treated me as if I was their son.
They were the café owners, were they?
The café owners. Well, it was a Madame Dietrich that, I think the husband was away at the war at the time, and so was her eldest son. And she ran this café with a bit of help from, I think, a son who wasn't quite old enough to be in the army.
Were you told, either before you left for France or afterwards, what your role in France would be? And did you come across this phrase, advanced air striking force, at that time?
Yes, we did think it was slightly a misnomer, because we weren't bombers that were striking at anybody, but we realised that, of course, they needed their defence, and that's how we visualised our real job was not really to escort our bombers. I don't think it was really to shoot the other chaps down. But I always thought it was a slight misnomer, because advanced air striking force does give the idea that you're going to attack ground targets and that sort of thing behind enemy lines, which we never did.
So how many Hurricanes did you have in the squadron?
Goodness. More than usual, I think. There are two flights of six each. Yes, just A and B flights. We had six each operational. They probably were reserves, I can't quite remember that.
Would you have your own personal aircraft?
Yes, we did pretty well, because, and that had been so, at Biggin Hill beforehand. You had your own fitter and rigger at that time. The chap, you really were a sort of team, you flew it and they maintained it. But when things start getting, when we actually into war and were fighting operationally, it was just sort of first come, first served.
So they were brand new aircraft, were they?
Oh, yes. We'd been to Merville, as I told you. We then spent a little time down at another airfield called Vitry en Artois. We spent about 3 months at each of those two places. And then we were withdrawn from the front line to re-equip at Abbeville.
At what stage was that?
And that was, A flight had already re-equipped. All of them had learned to fly Hurricanes when the balloon went up. And B flight, which is the flight I was in, mind you, there were two of us, the flight commander, and I had, and one other, Peter Hugo, were already had flown Hurricanes before. But we, I remember very clearly, because we'd been on a detachment to an airfield at Visson, that's Cap Grenet, with our gladiators, escorting, ostensibly to escort the leave ships, you know, the little shuttle sort of taking people backwards and forwards across. And we never did have any action with the enemy during that period. But it was on the day that we returned to Abbeville and had been and were out of the front line, and the very first morning nobody had flown one of the new Hurricanes, that they attacked us.
We'll come on to the attack in a moment, yeah. But could I ask you if there were any problems that you had with the Hurricane?
No. The first Hurricane ones, of course, were had fixed pitch propellers and were fairly sort of slow off the ground. And they didn't have any armour plating either, and they had fabric wings. But later on, they were replaced by aircraft, first with two-pitch propeller, then with variable pitch. At that stage, I think it was the original Hurricane ones we had.
What about the other minor equipment that you had in the way of clothing and heating in the aeroplane, that type of thing? Was all that satisfactory?
Yes, I mean, we we're talking about the period before operation started. Well, we seldom went up, you know, we went up to the sort of 30,000, low 30,000 feet heights, but never much higher. We had oxygen, of course, and we had, there was no pressurization or anything like that in those days. But you had to make sure your oxygen was on.
Were the planes heated?
No.
Did that cause any problems?
No. Our flying kit was pretty good. We had flying overalls, which seemed to do the job.
Now, you've said that you made particular friends with the people who billeted you, but can you generalise about relations between British forces in France and the French civilian population?
Well, only so far as my own squadron is concerned. I mean, we were treated most wonderfully everywhere we went. And the RAF were really welcomed everywhere. There were no incidents and that I've seen since some, you know, where you have people misbehaving and that sort of thing. I think our troops were well behaved, the officers were pretty well behaved too, and I can't remember any sort of incidents where there were complaints or anything like that.
Did you ever come across any hostility from any French person?
No, surprisingly not. Mind you, of course, these are the people in the north, and they were the closest. They were overrun first in the First World War, and I suppose they didn't want it to happen again. And the more forces they saw around, the happier they were.
Did you have much contact with the French Air Force?
Not a lot. We had a French liaison, Air Force liaison officer, of course, but he was more. At the beginning, it was more of a translator than anything else, and we seldom had any exercises with them. Visson, the airfield that I was telling you about where we did the lead boat patrols, that was a French airfield. And a reconnaissance aircraft, it was they had there, I forget the type now. But they, I mean, I remember one night they entertained us in their mess, and it was the most hilarious evening, and they were very friendly indeed. And we found an old, I forget what the name of the aircraft was, but it was a parasol. It was a first war airplane with a very high wing on a sort of boom, and a rotary engine. And this was tucked away in a hangar somewhere. And of course, as it was a French sector we were in, we only flew on the lead boat patrols and weren't at standby or readiness at all. And our flight commander got the NCOs to give us classes, as it were, in on the engines of this, on the engine of this thing, and we put the whole thing together. The first thing we did was to put the engine on the airplane, and then we ran it. We had to put just car plugs in it, we put, and the thing sort of leapt into the air, and everybody said it wants to fly. So we then continued and covered all the wing and the fuselage with fabric, and it was all, this was our sort of spare time activity. And then there were two chaps in particular, one an Australian called Bill Farmer, and the other one was a South African called Peter Hugo, who'd really worked on this thing like mad. And it was a biplane. I mean, it was a two-seater, not a biplane, but a two-seater. And it just had a three-stage throttle. It was either off, or was it cruise, or was flat out for takeoff. And it also, that was, you know, that was all about all there was to it. It had a rigging diagram on it, so we were able to get the sort of right angles on the control surfaces and all that sort of thing. But there was an argument between these two about who was going to fly it first. And of course, two of them have flown it, I should have thought, for the first time. But neither would give in, so they did. And they found the trim was out a bit, and they came down very, very quickly. And they said they had a bit of work to do on this, and we went off back to our hotel on the seaside. And then the next minute they were down there flying around, and they put the they ran their wheels along the beach on one occasion, and then I think the plugs oiled up because it used to do that quite a bit, and they had to land on the beach, and so changed plugs and took off again from the beach. And that was the day before the real war started. No, 2 days before. And the next day we all had to fly south to Abbeville, and Bill Fowler, this Australian, took this airplane to fly it back to where we were re-equipping. And his plugs oiled up, and he landed on the beach at Latuque and wheeled it up into the car park. It was a really light airplane. And there the Germans must have found it, I suppose.
What impression did you get of the French Air Force as a fighting force before hostilities started?
Well, we really didn't see anything of it. We were impressed by the morale of these chaps, reconnaissance chaps, because they were going out over the German, into the German territory and taking photographs and things. And they seemed to be... there was no talk of their casualties or anything like that, and they seemed to know what they were about.
Did the German Air Force come across on raids or leaflet dropping or anything of that kind?
Oh, yes. They used to drop leaflets, and we used to try and intercept them. In fact, our flight commander shot one down from a Gladiator, because when he saw, it used to do the same thing most mornings. head down south over us towards the Cherbourg Peninsula and then cut across to the UK and then go up to the sort of Thames estuary area and then head back for Germany. And so when he saw this thing go over, he headed for the Thames estuary, and he was there with a bit of an advantage of height. A chap called James Saunders, who was our flight commander. And he shot one down there.
So their tactics were invariable?
Well, quite extraordinary how they came along the same routes almost at the same times, and usually pretty high.
Would these be armed aircraft?
Oh, I imagine so, yes. I think there was a tail gunner who shot at James Saunders.
Did you ever intercept one of these German leaflet raids yourself?
No.
Now, can we go on to the actual German attack on May the 10th, and can you tell me what you recollect of that day as far as it affected
yes.
you personally?
Well, as I said earlier, we'd got back the day before from that detachment at Wieson. And of course, it was a sort of a whoopee night. We had a dinner and a party the night before, because we were, the next day, not going to be operational, but we were simply going to learn to fly these new airplanes, the Hurricanes. But the crack of dawn, there was one of the auxiliary chaps was a duty pilot in the airfield, a chap called Levin Fredman. And some little airman came rushing into him and shook him and woke him and said, "They're attacking the airfield, sir." And he said, he didn't really believe it, and then there was a thump outside. And so he said, the airman said to him, what should we do? And he said, "Start me an airplane." And of course he'd never flown a Hurricane, so the chap said Hurricane or Gladiator, and he hadn't flown a Hurricane, so he took a Gladiator. In the meantime, we'd been alerted up. We had no chateau, which overlooked the airfield, was about a mile away, which was we were using as a mess. And so we'd been alerted, and we all came down on this in our buses, lorries they were really. And we saw Levin take off and climb and climb and climb and climb. And we all shouted, "Windy!" And then, of course, he dived down and he got one. And that was a tremendous morale lifter for us, because the thing had started. They never destroyed a single airplane. They bombed from about 8,000 feet and didn't come below. That's why Levin had a climb. I mean, if one of them had come down low with his front gunner, there was a line of Hurricanes on one side of the airfield and a line of... on the other angle, there was a line of Gladiators, and they never destroyed an airfield. And the Pioneer Corps filled in the few holes that they made on the airfield. And the airfield was operational all the time. And so, you know, we all shouted, "They're windy, they're windy!" Then, having accused old Levin of it, and it was good for morale, because these chaps, literally one airplane with a front gunner could have taken out all the Hurricanes and all the Gladiators, and they never damaged one. Quite remarkable.
Was Levin the only one who got up on that occasion then?
Oh, well, he was the duty pilot on his own down at the airfield, so he was there when the thing started. We, of course, when we got there, they'd gone, and everybody was very keen to scramble after them and so on, but that would have been silly, and we were then immediately put at alert. And there was a sort of crash program on the training the chaps who hadn't flown Hurricanes before. But they took to them. I mean, some of those chaps went into combat almost on the first trip that they did in a Hurricane. They'd have done a circuit and landing and learned about the undercarriage, because the Gladiator, of course, had a fixed undercarriage. And it was quite remarkable very soon, I mean, everybody was flying the Hurricanes, even though they'd only had a few, an hour or two on them.
Can you now tell me how subsequent events came out? How did your duties then pan out?